All right, y'all, welcome back to the show. It's Anti-War Radio. And our next guest is Joey King from the Veterans for Peace. That's veteransforpeace.org. He has a military history in the U.S. Army. As long as your arm was a platoon leader and a company executive officer back in the days, now he's a peacemonger. Welcome to the show.
Thanks, Scott. Appreciate you having me on.
Well, I'm very happy to have you here. I was impressed, as always, with y'all's statement this time on Libya and what it means to the Veterans for Peace. So why don't you tell us what the war in Libya means to the Veterans for Peace?
Well, like so many of them, it's based on a lie, and it's about oil. That's kind of the nub of it, you know?
Yep, sounds about right. All right, so now... that's a terrible sin to accuse your government of lying. Which particular lie are you referring to here?
Oh, just so many of them. It's hard to nail one down in particular. You know, we've got a similar situation going on in Syria right now. Nobody's talking about getting in there because there's no oil, basically. Gaddafi's been on the radar screen since the Reagan administration, and one form or another, and then he became our friend a few years ago when he was going to give us some of the oil, and now for whatever reason, I guess with other events in the Arab Spring and the WikiLeaks with Bradley Manning, I think that he's persona non grata again, and now we want him out, and I'm not sure, nor do I think anybody's sure. You seem to have a pretty good pulse on it as far as how many of these rebels there are, who these rebels are in Libya, and...
New Yorker said there was 1,000 of them.
Right, exactly.
1,000, a ragtag band of Mad Max guys in the back of pickup trucks, you know? Army at all.
No, and, you know, our air support, no matter how heavy it gets, it just really can't support 1,000 troops if that number is correct. And that's the number I've heard. I've not heard any greater number than that, nor have I heard what these guys are about, other than they don't like Gaddafi. Well, a lot of people don't like Gaddafi, including me. He's no Gandhi, you know, but he does have a base of support amongst his tribal people, from what I read, and in the western part of Libya, and that's where most of the oil is. He said when this thing first started going out that it would break down into a civil war if we weren't careful, and his prediction is true. It's an east versus west thing, and doesn't look like a lot of support in the east outside of the second city of Libya.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, I mean, I don't know if you guys are working up a bunch of statements about what not to do there. Now that we're already in, you know they're going to end up having to escalate unless somebody gets a real lucky shot at Muammar Gaddafi at some point here. John McCain's going to start, complaining and crying so loud. Obama's going to have to send the Marines into Tripoli, I think. And, that's where we start talking about not just those sort of unpersons over there, the Untermenschen or whatever in North Africa, but Americans are going to start dying over there before too long. It seems like the only alternative to that is Obama admitting that he completely screwed up and got us into a war he shouldn't have got us into, and just admitting he lost and leaving Gaddafi in power and going home, and that ain't going to happen.
No, and it does bring in a whole different argument I know Ron Paul and yourself and several others have and Kucinich and so forth, how did we get in here? It's just one man's declaration that, by the way, we're going in. By the way, we're already in. And no congressional consultation, and nobody seems to really be pushing the violation of the War Powers Act outside of, Dennis Kucinich and Ron Paul and maybe a couple others.
Yep. Well, and that really is the thing. It's funny. I was just talking with this guy in Israel, a Jewish peace activist in Tel Aviv, talking about the crisis of the permanent occupation over there. And he was talking about the major disconnect between the people of Israel and the Likud government that they're stuck with, that just keeps beating them over the head with the security issue, and you're going to get suicide bombed and all this stuff. all day and night, and so they end up going along perpetually with a policy they're opposed to. It sounds a lot like America to me.
Yeah, I did catch part of that interview, and there are some similarities, isn't there? That's for
sure. I mean, it really does strike a familiar tone, and I guess, you know, the only hope is that the disparity is so obvious to so many people now that it can't continue on, but I can't say I see the path to accountability either, you know?
No, and I think that the, and I'm sure you would agree, that the Democratic activists that were so against the wars of George Bush seemed to have faded away on Election Day after Barack Obama became president, and it's very disturbing to me because, you know, if George Bush would have done the same thing, you know, the Democratic activists that were against the war, you know, the movement.orgs or whomever, would have been far more stringent than they have been, you know, with this escalation in Afghanistan and now Syria. And,
yeah, well, you know, I saw the most ridiculous poll number like that the other day that had, I think it was just yesterday, that had 70% of the American people are against the war in Afghanistan, but then it was 70% of Democrats approve of Barack Obama's handling of Afghanistan.
Yeah, there's definitely a disconnect. And, you know, I guess the easiest way to explain that is a mile wide and an inch deep. They just don't seem to be as opposed to the war of Barack Obama as they were, you know, when George Bush was in charge. And I know I listened to a Cindy Sheehan interview that you did, I don't know, 2 months ago or so when you had her on, and she, you know, it's been a constant complaint of hers is the fact that, you know, the Democrats seem to be okay as long as it's a Democrat war, but not okay when it's a Republican war. And it's definitely a double standard that's laughable anymore.
Yeah. Well, it really is sad. I mean, you think back to even 2002, 2003, it was pretty obvious that most of the people protesting that war were, at the very least, silent, if not supportive, of Bill Clinton's war in Kosovo. And if
sure.
It had been anybody but a bunch of oil executives and neocons planning the thing, if it had been Bill Clinton's third term and he had said, we're going to go liberate the Iraqi people and whatever, and we're going to go to the United Nations for a resolution saying it's okay first and whatever, they would have gone right along with it. It was just that it was a bunch of guys that, I mean, they thought Bush was from Texas anyway, like in the TV show. And so they just didn't trust, you know, cynical Texas Republican oil men, Christian types that we don't like. So they couldn't possibly really have good motives. But if Bill Clinton and Madeleine Albright had been implementing the exact same policy, they would have been for it. So now here we are again. It's just the same thing.
Yep, you're exactly right. It's the actions are not important. It's whether you have a D or an R behind your name that is the most important thing, unfortunately.
Yeah,
so,
well, and certainly we can see all of a sudden this reemergence of at least the war skeptical right, if not the anti-war right, in this country. But it's not based on, you know, everybody went back and read Garrett Garrett or anything like that. It's just that they don't like Barack Obama, and so why would you put him in charge of a war? You know, he's a Kenyan secret agent here to get us or something.
Exactly. And you know, it's something that, you know, we've probably done a poor job of, and I'm I hope that we can do better as far as reaching out to the anti-war right, which I know is, you know, a large part of your audience, and we probably have done a poor job of reaching out to those folks because, yeah, I guess probably the easiest way to explain it, in my local chapter here in Nashville, we've got a pretty hardcore libertarian and a pretty hardcore socialist, and they both agree that war sucks. They disagree, you know, on the causes of war, but they definitely disagree that war sucks, and we're all veterans, and we're all opposed to war. So, you know, it's probably something that we need to do on our end to outreach to some of the folks with the more libertarian-minded.
Yeah, there you go. Well, we can talk more about that. I hope when we get back from this break, it's Joey King. He sits on the board of Veterans for Peace, veteransforpeace.org. If you're a veteran and you're for peace, you might should join up. All right, y'all, welcome back to the show. It's Anti-War Radio. I'm Scott Horton, and I'm talking with Joey King from the Veterans for Peace about the wars. Lots and lots of wars. So, we're talking about the anti-war right. As long as Democrats are in power, at least they're listening, especially if you can focus on the money. But, you know, I think it's also kind of instructive. I don't know. It depends on, you know, how dumb the conservative you're dealing with is. But, you know, maybe they could be taught that, you know, war is the health of the state, and that's bad. And just look at what a giant empire you created by supporting George Bush that then you turned over to this devil Obama. And, you know, wasn't that a mistake? And just look, now Obama has the power to torture people. Are you sure you wanted that? Ooh, what if it was Hillary Clinton? Then how bad could it be? You know, war is, it's not just what's bankrupting our treasury, our government's treasury, our own bank accounts. It's also completely, you know, bankrupting the Bill of Rights. It's bankrupting the American way, you know?
I agree, and I think that, you know, there is a, of course, you know, Ron Paul announcing his presidency today, and I know you had referenced a poll from about 6 months ago that basically split the Tea Party movement in half. You know, half of them believed as Ron Paul did, you know, more or less what you were just saying, and the other half were more of the Sarah Palin kind of people, and there's definitely a you know, strong, and I think stronger, anti-imperialist right, and I think people, you know, start to see through it a little bit more, that you know, the Bill of Rights and the size of government expands, in a war, and, you know, there's just no winning it. You know, individual liberty does suffer greatly when you have those things, happen.
Yeah. Well, you know, back in 2002 in the run-up to the Iraq War, I thought, you know, because there were a lot of people who were, you know, kind of the populist right who hated more than just Bill Clinton, but the actual government and really were anti-war in Kosovo, that kind of thing, who basically just were so jaded with the system in general. They couldn't believe in George Bush or anything like that, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I thought it was such a shame that they didn't, you know, have the leadership or whatever to get together and march in their camouflage, because almost all of them are veterans, you know, and, mm-hmm. and march in their camouflage with signs that said right wing and anti-war and go march with the hippies against the war, try to stop it. A lot of them were against. A lot of them knew that Saddam Hussein had been bombed and blockaded for a dozen years, that he couldn't be a threat even to Kuwait at this point, much less the United States. And it seems like that's really the powerful message that needs to be heard. That's why people took to Ron Paul so quickly back in 2007, was because he was saying you don't have to be a Michael Moore type to be anti-war. You could be you know, Christian Republican from Texas like me and say that this is just unwise. It's, you know, we're wasting our money, we're creating enemies and changing the nature of our own society at home, and all those great arguments in let people like go ahead and say, oh, okay, well, cool then. You know, I don't have to be like Michael Moore. I could be like Ron Paul and be anti-war, and they signed right up, you know.
Well, you know, I tried personally, you know, to recruit a lot of people, you know, from the anti-war right, to you know, maybe participate in rallies and stuff, and it was kind of weird because a lot of them thought that, oh, you know, some of the Michael Moore is going to rub off on me. It's like, you know, handling toxic material or something. I really can't explain it, and I, you know, just from a personal quest that I had, I you know, didn't have a great deal of luck one-on-one with a lot of the people that I knew that are of that persuasion, you know, certainly I'm not wanting to give up at all, but it is kind of weird that they just felt that a lot of them, oh gosh, I can't be hanging around with those lefties, you know, even though you do agree with them on the anti-war position, you know, I believe a lot of those folks felt that it was just going to rub off on them somehow, that Michael Moore would rub off on them. It's difficult to explain.
Yeah, well, you know, every time the parties switch back and forth, you know, more or less half the population is mollified and the other half gets to be angry for a little while, and then they switch back again. But also, people wash out, too. And there are some people who notice that the next guy is just like the last guy, and that maybe they really aren't a Democrat, or maybe they're really not a Republican like they thought they were, when they see the continuity of the change that they thought they were going to get when they fell for it, you know, back before. So I think, you know, it takes a while, apparently, but slowly but surely, I think more and more people are really realizing, like we were talking about before, that disconnect between, you know, the way things really are and the way our government would have us believe, and what's the wise thing to do, and what it is that they want to do. And I guess I'm not really sure how anything's going to really, you know, for the process for changing any of it, but it seems like at some point there's got to be just a critical mass of understanding about, you know, priorities at least, you know, what's most important, like ending these wars, for crying out loud.
Well, the young people in this last election, and if you go back and look, you know, 1972, when 18-year-olds got the right to vote, of course, you had the draft going on, and, you know, they voted overwhelmingly Democrat and the greatest percentage they'd ever voted until the Obama election. You know, they just really stayed at home up until the Obama election. But I think a lot of those people came disillusioned pretty quickly when they saw that Obama was just the same. You know, Obama does have a nicer tone of the language than Bush, but as far as the policies, I can't tell any difference. You know, he's nicer about it. He's not as blunt and as belligerent as George Bush was, but I don't think that he's changed significantly from the policies of George Bush. And I think the younger people saw through that pretty quickly. And if you remember the email database that Obama had when he was running for office was, you know, supposedly going to take and be adapted and move on with all these different policies that they wanted to implement and everything, and they basically did nothing with it, which tells you that they didn't want to do anything with it, in my mind, because they certainly could have, you know, mobilize the population to do anything. And I think the population was ready for some significant change. And then, you know, they just needed a direction to be pointed to. And nobody pointed them. I was within the Democratic Party. I think a lot of people got disillusioned. I believe you're right. They just looked at it and said, this is what everybody was telling me that was older than me, that, you know, a lot of these, you know, don't get your hopes up too high. And I think that was very evident with the younger people in the last election.
Mm-hmm. Well, now, so what about Veterans for Peace? Has y'all's membership dropped off? Is it getting stronger again, maybe?
We have had, you know, I think every movement with the economy kind of tanking a couple years ago, you know, had a downsize a little bit, but we have been building our membership back up. At the moment, we've got 12 forming chapters, you know, which people have put the paperwork in and are waiting to get more people to join. I know there are two in Tennessee, and one in Knoxville, and one in Johnson City. There's a new chapter forming in the Philippines. So we got, I know there was an e-blast came out that, then you can go to veteransforpeace.org, and if you want to join one of the new chapters or an existing chapter or no chapter at all, feel free to join us for that. But yeah, it does seem to be coming back steadily over the last 12 to 18 months. We've gradually been building our membership back up.
Well, that's good. I don't know, you know, what could possibly be effective. It seems like maybe doing primary challenges from the left on some of these Democrats in the House of Representatives and you know, hitting them with their failure to do anything about the wars and being able to claim veteran for peace at the same time is a good way to silence the critics who say you can't talk about war unless you've been there or whatever. You know what I mean? You get to outflank them on the been there issue and on the they're not doing anything right about an issue, and maybe force the conversation a little bit more toward the anti-war sense in the primary election coming up. What do you think?
Well, it does. You know, just the name itself, you know, kind of tells you that, you know, we were on one side of the issue, you know, many years ago, and now we're not. And you know, it does give you some street cred, so to speak. As soon as you mention that name or wear a T-shirt or a hat that says Veterans for Peace, people, you know, they kind of look at you a little different light, I think. You know, I gave a talk to a high school here in Nashville a couple weeks ago, and apparently it's like we've done it for 6 years now, and apparently it's so popular that we're going to have to rent an auditorium or book the high school auditorium next year because so many of the kids were talking about it.
Maybe you ought to consider running for Congress. Who's your congressman? Challenge him from the left.
I'm a conscientious non-voter.
Oh, good. Well, yeah, me too. I'm at the bottom of the barrel here, grasping at straws. All right, thanks, Joey King, everybody. VeteransForPeace.org. Thanks a lot.
Thanks, Scott.